زوجي قال لي شبكتين تين فرشة كابل بدي هيك بدي تين 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 تبي عنا ويقصوا تين تين فرشة We are committed to that, not like to send people packing home. We don't like that. But we always appreciate that care. So you communicate if there is something that you don't understand. A heart center by its nature is a very emotive center. But together as MPs and MPs and MPLs, and we shall develop the trust, we are trust of responsibility. Often showing, among other things, that people receive health care in line with what is outlined in the Constitution and Constitutional Act. We are to ensure that health workers do provide care services, but also to ensure that when people don't have an understanding on how the sector functions, we have that responsibility, all of us. And therefore, with that responsibility, that on our shoulders, we can afford to be emotional ourselves. And I hope that we, for the reason that we have called our provinces, because we want to have an understanding of the sector, of the health sector right across, and we don't have any other avenue outside that of conducting an oversight. Remember that we conduct our oversight on the basis of the program of parliament, which at times frustrates us because it's not enabling us to be out and do the stuff to be. And therefore, calling you, we hope that you will be open and honest to us. We are not here to judge you, we are not here to blame you. We will be critical in areas where we could be. We are not critical, precisely for only one thing, to ensure that people that are serving by public hospitals, they do receive the service that they deserve. With that, I'm welcoming everybody. We are going to an introduction. House rules, I think everybody knows, phones are to be on silent mode. And when we introduce ourselves, we use mics. Tell where one is coming from, the organization. Photos are only taken by people that are designated to do that. Questions will only be asked by members of parliament to Mpumalanga Department of Health, and to the one that is then making a presentation. I'm Lingera Kunjwa. I'm the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Next to me is Robert Majalamba, who is the secretary of the Portfolio Committee. On my extreme right at the back is Melissa, who is our media communication person. Next to her is Melissa, our content advisor. At the back is Moses, the researcher. Next to Moses is Asanda, who is the researcher of the study group of the Afghanistan Congress, and the extreme at the back next to the window is Bayu, who is our committee assistant. Members will then introduce themselves after that to the department of Mpumalanga, led by the MEC and all the other people that have visited us, which are guests. Thank you very much. Over to you, honorable members.
Committee and I don't know. ningalihlali kuyo izibili.
Good afternoon, Dr. S. Chambeguayo, member of the Committee on Health. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Lindy Wilson, member of the Portfolio on Health. Thank you.
Over to you, Ms. Francisco. How you do it depends on you. If you want to introduce the routine yourself, it's fine. We'll be presented. Thank you.
I'm Julian Mashiho, the MEC for Health in Malanga Province. On my far right is Jabal Ngozi, Chief Director, HR. Elias Mokwani, Acting Chief Director, Infrastructure. Next to me is the Head of the Department, Dr. Fabela Mohandi. The gentleman is Paswana Mohan, the DDG, Chief Financial Officer. Next to him is Mpoma Mohali, the Chief Director of Hospital Services. And then the man behind me is Mulise Macha, Director Integrated Planning.
Good afternoon, I'm Dr. Tandrai, I'm from the South African Medical Association.
Good afternoon, I'm Cindy the Soda from National Department of Health.
Good afternoon, my name is Gavada Kazama from Department of Health.
Good evening, my name is Fostam Hali, I'm the Acting Spokesperson for National Health Department.
Good afternoon, I'm Tamar Khan from Business Day.
Meenash Tiwa from...
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Member for the welcome. And please, we don't know who's going to lead, but can we hand it over to you?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. I'll handle the overview and then hand over to the HOD to deal with the content of the presentation. Let me start by thanking the Portfolio Committee on Health for inviting us here today to present our state of affairs in the Mpumalanga Department of Health. Honorable Chair, our task as the Mpumalanga Department of Health is to ensure that we provide a long and a healthy life for all South Africans. Our biggest focus is on the National Development Plan, which places emphasis on raising the life expectancy of South Africans to at least 70 years, progressively improve TB prevention and cure, reduce maternal, infant and child mortality, significantly reduce prevalence of non-communicable diseases, reduce injury, accidents and violence by 50% from the 2010 levels. Honorable Chair, let me say that our situation in Mpumalanga is currently not looking good. Our biggest frustration at the moment was on the issue of security. We have experienced a number of attacks in our health facilities where in some cases members of the community became the ones who attack our nurses, especially at night. These are people who go to taverns and when they are drunk, they fight each other and end up in our health facilities, where they demand to be given the first preference, and when our nurses don't do what they say, they get attacked. We have also seen robberies in some of the facilities. A case in point is one of our hospitals where a doctor was nearly killed when he came across robbers in his residential place within the hospital in Mafudane, Bushbuckridge. We have since made interventions because I've already met with MEC for Finance, MEC for Community Safety and Security, and Livelihood in the province. We have unilaterally decided that we deploy armed guards in all our health facilities in the province, and this is a decision that is currently being implemented. We are hopeful that our staff and patients will now find joy in executing their duties because of the safer environment. We have also decided that we will, in the meantime, look at other ways of providing permanent better security systems in our health facilities. Chairperson, our second biggest challenge that we are faced with is the matter regarding the shortage of staff. We have seen a number of protests by our own employees, and in other cases, community members have closed our clinics because of this problem. This is a serious problem because our current budget is not enough to cater for the number of personnel that we require. However, with the little budget that we have, we believe that we can find a way to appoint staff. I have engaged the Honourable Premier of the province, Honourable Ms. Rufilomse, and also I have taken the matter up with Treasury. The two are fully behind us, and we have promised to intervene and help us resolve the problem. We have now started to advertise posts for doctors and nurses, and we are hopeful that we will try and close the gaps. We have also given our CEO's delegations to replace staff that has passed or will retire. Just a few weeks ago, I called a meeting with all the CEOs where we identified money on their overtime budget. We have decided that we will use that money to appoint more staff instead of spending it on overtime. We are hopeful that this will also remedy the situation. We are also continuing to enhance specialists even outside the borders of the Republic. We are also banking on the students that we sent to study medicine in foreign countries. Students in the Caribbean program increased from 10 in 2014 to 229 in 2016-17. Of the 229 students, 59 have already qualified as doctors. Doctors enrolled on the registered training increased from normally used to send a batch of 10, and now in terms of the registrars, we are now at 28 in 2017-18. We believe that this will ensure that the province increases the number of specialists in the province, as we are expecting more doctors to graduate this year. We also have a nursing college where we train nurses. To date, a total of 763 students were recruited at Mpumalanga Nursing College from 2014. We also have an agreement with KZN where we send our nursing students to study for a diploma. These are students who are studying the four-year nursing diploma program. All these are some interventions to ensure that we close the gaps, because after graduation we place these nurses and doctors in facilities that are in dire need of medical staff. The department is also implementing GP contracting to cap the non-availability of doctors at PHC facilities, which results in the bypass of these facilities by community members who flock to the hospitals. Today, Health Valley District has 21 doctors contracted. In the Health Valley District, 54 of our 76 PHC facilities are covered by doctors visiting once a week. 66 of the 90 facilities at Nkangala District and 74 of the 121 facilities at Ekazini District are visited by doctors. Honorable Chairperson, we have a challenge with regard to our emergency medical services. We have been receiving complaints from the public that our EMS is not responding on time. We have seen many complaints where people end up dying while waiting for EMS to respond. We are making interventions. We are currently doing an assessment of the number of EMS vehicles so that we determine how many we have, of which of those, how many are already and how many are there that are no longer usable. This will help us to know the exact number of ambulances we have in the province and subsequently inform us on how many we need. We have just completed installing a system that will monitor the movement of our ambulance fleet. our calls logged, and the response time. We hope that this will ensure improvements in our service. In addition, Chair, we will integrate our planned patient transport system into EMS. This is to ensure efficiency and also try and improve the transporting of patients from one facility to another. As Mpumalanga province, we are one of the places where we inherited many old and dilapidated health infrastructures. Our first intervention was to build new health facilities and also renovate those that we can. We are busy with renovations of some of the hospitals and some we are building from scratch. At the moment, we are busy building four modern high-tech hospitals, which are Makuleni Hospital, Middlebury Hospital, Mamisake, and Betan Hospital, all of which are in different phases of construction. Our focus does not only remain in the hospitals. Our primary healthcare facilities are equally important. Honorable Chair, given the state of our financial assets, we have also decided to go the route of building innovative building technology, which is IBT structures. They are durable, can last up to 50 years, and it is quick and cheaper to build. This will be so that our people can continue to have better health facilities despite our financial challenges. A number of IBT structures have already been delivered and constructed. We have built 28 IBT structures in the province and will continue to build more. Maintenance in the province has always been an issue. Some of the equipment and facilities are dilapidating because there was no maintenance taking place. That is why we have now set aside an amount of 25 million for the repairs of boilers in all of our hospitals. We have further made available an amount of 28 million for the repairs and maintenance of life-saving equipment such as generators, autoclaves, theater, air conditioners, and many more. We have further made available an amount of 5 million for drilling of boreholes because in Mpumalanga is one province that has a problem with the shortage of water. We believe that our sister department, which is Public Works, Road and Transport, which is the one assisting us with maintenance, will help us improve things. Honorable Chair, we are currently building various clinics and community health care centers. We do not just build any form of primary health care structure. We build PHC that are of IDEA clinic status. The current PHC facilities that have reached an IDEA status are 87 of 287. Our focus in the current 2018-19 financial year is to increase the number of facilities that are going to be IDEA to 116 of 287 primary healthcare facilities. In Mpumalanga, our focus is more preventative than curative. That is why we are implementing the five streams of primary healthcare re-engineering to ensure improved access to quality healthcare. We have one-based primary healthcare outreach team whose main responsibility is to reduce maternal and child morbidity and mortality, improve access to health services, and to support national health insurance implementation. Today, 235 streams have been established since 2013-14, covering 241 of the 402 municipal wards and form part of Operation Rugal 7 in all the districts. The department needs to establish 560 outreach teams to cover all 402 wards. The integrated school health policy was signed by the Minister of Health and the Minister of Basic Education in 2012 to increase access to health services and provide a safety net for children who never had access to health care services. The total number of teams increased from 26 in the 2014-15 financial year to 68 in the 2017-18 financial year. A further 33 teams will be established in 2018-19 financial year. 30,248 learners were screened in the 2017-18 and 6,265 learners who had medical conditions picked up were transferred to the nearby PHCs and hospitals depending on their conditions. Honorable Chair, there is a growing concern of over the waiting times for our people when visiting our health facilities. We have also realized that our people have the tendency of jumping their primary health care facilities and come directly to the hospital to seek help even on minor health problems that can be addressed at the clinic. Our plan is to reduce the long waiting times in all health facilities. The continuation of the central chronic medication dispensing and distribution program will serve as another solution to this problem. Today, the number of clinics enrolled on the central chronic medication dispensing and distribution program increased from 18,000 since its inception in February 2014 to 186,407 clients in 2017-18. The department has recorded significant achievements in the key indicators of maternal child, women health and nutrition. There is a great improvement on women who are booking for ANC before 20 weeks in 2017-18. 73.8 bookings before 20 weeks were compared to 55 of 2014-15. Children under 5 years, diarrhea case, fatality rate has improved. Child under 5 years, pneumonia case, fatality rate has also improved. Cervical cancer screening increased from 63.3 in 2014-15 to 78 in 2017-18. Financially. Maternal and child mortality has been reduced from 163 per 100,000 live births in 2014-15 to 120 per 100,000 births in 2017-18. Honorable Chair, the availability of medicine in all health facilities is very essential to fight various kinds of diseases, including communicable and non-communicable. Our plan is to ensure that 95% of essential medicine is available at medical level. The department is on course in managing all issues raised by the Auditor General of South Africa. The issues of confiscation in previous financial year include movable, tangible capital assets, movable, tangible capital assets, and irregular expenditure. Plans have been implemented to resolve the above mentioned issues. Irregular expenditure will be reduced by 3.1 billion. Movable assets have been successfully surrendered to the Department of Public Works, Roads and Transport, while movable asset register has been updated. Our plan for the new financial year is to avoid qualified opinions by strengthening the internal controls. Chairperson, let me not dwell further as my colleagues will be presenting before. Some of the issues will be touched by the head of department on the presentation. With your permission, I will want to hand over to the interview.
Over to you, thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members and colleagues. I'm going to do the presentation for the Department of Health in Mpumalanga Province. The outline of my presentation is on the purpose, the background, the situational analysis, a brief on our strategic goals, our budget summary, and then the key issues on the hospital status report as required by the committee and then the key decisions that are required. So my purpose is to present the status of the hospitals in Mpumalanga Province. The Department of Health is based basically on the legislative mandate, which is the Constitution, as our Honourable Chairperson mentioned in her opening remarks, as well as the National Health Act in terms of the legal mandate. Our outcome 2, which is a long and healthy life for all South Africans, forms the basis of our department, and this outcome also focuses on the 10 sub-outcomes, which contribute to the Vision 2030 and the NDP, and the 10 outcomes are outlined on slide 6. I won't read each one. Just to say that in terms of our province, we have 3 districts, which is in Kandala, Eswatini, and Kasibande, and there are 17 sub-districts in our province. The population in our province is just over 4.4 million, and if you look at the distribution, you can see that there are more males than females, especially in the ages under 9, as well as the youth ages of 25 to 34. The situational analysis currently in our province is that we have 320 health facilities. We have 33 hospitals that are broken up into 2 tertiary hospitals, 5 regional and the rest of district. We have 228 clinics and 59 DSCs in total. The strategic goals and objectives of our department is to improve the access to healthcare services and continuously attain the health outcomes. The objective to reach this goal is to expand access to healthcare services, is to improve the healthcare outcomes and improve quality of care. And the second goal is the overall of the health system and progressively reduce the healthcare costs. And here our objectives are to realign our human resources to the departmental needs and to strengthen the health system's effectiveness. It says, well, to improve the health facility planning and to accelerate the infrastructure delivery. The budget summary is just, this slide is just showing that our budget in the last financial year was just over 12 billion and it's increased in this financial year to 13.2 billion. Our, in slide 16, the budget is basically indicating our share in terms of the conditional grant that we get from the National Department of Health, which totals 578 million. Here, Honourable Chairperson, on slide 17, I'm trying to indicate the challenges that we do have with the budget, because you can see that our budget did increase from 12.1 to 13.2 billion. However, there is a bit of a challenge where you can see that in terms of our voter funds, the budget in terms of goods and services decreased, as well as the budget for the transfers and subsidies and the machinery and equipment, which does pose a challenge for the department, as our money at the moment is concentrating on the buildings and other things, structure. On slide 18 is the narrative in terms of the budget that I've just explained, where you can see that we did get an increase in terms of the COE, but this is just basically for the current warm bodies, and there's no provision for any new appointments that was provided for in the budget of 2018-19. Our COE budget currently is at 59.3% against the national benchmark, which says it should be between 62 and 65% of the total budget that has been allocated. Slide 19, the rest of my presentation will focus on the key issues of the hospital status. The first topic was on the access. The equity of access in the Mpumalanga province focuses on the following key aspects, which is the type or availability of services provided at various levels of care to serve the communities. We have available resources and improved health outcomes, which will then indicate the relevance or the effectiveness of the services that we are providing. Our department renders healthcare services on slide 22. In terms of the community-based health services, currently we have 300 home-based carers, 235 ward-based patient outreach teams, as my NEC has presented already, and we have 68 school health service teams. We also have 81 mobile clinics that provide services, the 228 clinics, and our 59 community health centers. We have 22 district hospitals and the 5 TB specialized hospitals, as well as 3 regional and 2 tertiary hospitals in Mpumalanga. On slide 23, in terms of the health outcomes, we're showing that our interventions does help improve our outcomes, because you can see that the antenatal first visit before 20 weeks has shown a steady increase from 2014-15 until the end of the last financial year. This also goes to the couple-year protection rate, where we have seen a steady increase, although small, but it is slowly increasing. This goes to our cervical cancer screening as well, where we have seen quite a big increase from the last financial year to the end of 2017-18. Our maternal mortality in-facility ratio is still a challenge in the province. We have noticed that there's been an increase over the years, although last year we did see a slight decrease, and we also attribute it to the district clinical specialist teams that we have in the province. Our immunization coverage has reached 90.4%, and that is our target was 90%. In terms of the infant PCR test positive around 6 weeks, we are doing quite well in the province. We are currently at 1.1%. As the Honourable MEC mentioned, the under 5 pneumonia case fatality rate has also reduced, and the clients that are remaining on antiretrovirals, currently we have just over 411,000. This is not enough, especially if we have to reach the 2 million in the country, so we have to intensify our efforts here. The TB cure rate, we are not doing so well. You can see that we have been regressing as well, and this we attribute to the fact that a lot of our patients are not, once they start to feel better with the TB treatment, they don't come back to check whether they've been cured or not in terms of the producing of sputum. So we are now counseling them to ensure that they understand the importance to go throughout the treatment right until the end. Our malaria case fatality rate, we were doing quite okay, but in the last financial year, we saw a huge increase in the malaria case fatality rate. And this is, as there was an outbreak in the province in April and in October last year, where we saw an increase due to the changes in the rainfall patterns that had occurred in the province. We had an outbreak, as I mentioned earlier, where we saw 9,449 cases, and there were 96 deaths from malaria. The next few slides, Honourable Chairperson, I won't dwell much, but it's just giving you the number of hospitals per district and the number of approved beds and usable beds that are currently there. The three districts, as I mentioned, is Ishwanveni. On slide 26 talks about the hospitals of Khashkibande. On slide 27 is the hospitals that are in Gandala district. The next topic that we were requested to also prepare information on was in the quality care. The quality of care is measured through the compliance of the national core standards as set out by the Office of Health and Compliance, and the purpose is to develop a common definition of quality care, which should be found in all our health establishments with an aim of improving access. Currently, unfortunately, none of our 33 hospitals are fully compliant to the national core standards. However, you will see in the following slides there is a gradual improvement over the years, with some of the hospitals performing better than others. But then I say that all our hospitals have developed and implemented, and they are implementing the quality improvement plans to address the gaps that have been identified. Slide 30 just talks to the domain. In terms of Ishwanveni, the overall performance of our hospitals, as I mentioned, you'll see there are some that have improved. The one that is highlighted in green is the assessment that is done by the Office of Health Service Compliance, and the rest of them were basically the self-assessments that we do as a province. You can see that our hospitals, in terms of Ross Pereira Hospital in Ishwanveni district, when the office did the assessment, it was at 61%. Our self-assessment last year showed that there was an increase to 83%, and I do acknowledge that the self-assessment may be biased as well, because it is it's done from within the province. So in this financial year, when we are doing the self-assessment, we have the provincial teams, and we will also be rotating the district teams. So for example, the Ishwanveni district will go to Khashkibande, and Khashkibande maybe to Gangala, so that there can be a bit more objectivity in terms of the assessments that we will be doing. To the Kuswala Hospital, also you can see that in 2016, the Office of Health Standard Compliance, when they came, we were only found to be at 52%. Matikwana Hospital was at 43%. Subsequent to the visit by the Office of Health Services Compliance in 2015, the Department of Health in Mpumalanga, we've taken over Matikwana Hospital. Basically, we've bought it over because it was owned by Life of the Many, and we are now managing the hospital 100%. So we have seen an improvement in terms of the staff score. In Khashkibande, we've also noticed that our hospitals, as I mentioned, none of them are compliant. Emboleni Hospital was at 63% in 2016. The one before the office had done the assessment, I think, was in 2014, and there was an improvement in 2016. Evander Hospital, when the office came in 2015, we were at 57%, but subsequently we have seen as an improvement, and this is also attributed to the fact that we changed the leadership at Evander at the end of 2015. And with the new leadership, we've seen that there has been an improvement in terms of the service delivery at our hospital. I won't go through each and every hospital, but as I mentioned, you can see that none of our hospitals are compliant to the national core standards, although there is some that have improved and some that have really regressed as well. When we look at all our hospitals, there are some gaps that have been found to be common in all our hospitals, and then we've also put some remedial actions. For example, in the domain of patient safety, the challenge there is that the clinical audits of each of the priority programs and health initiatives are not conducted. So now we insist on clinical audits being conducted quarterly, and then this is also monitored by the provincial office. The safety precautions that prevent harming in the units where children are cared for was not observed. So we now have control access at the entrance of our pediatric ward, and we have a security guard that is deployed in front of the pediatric ward 24 hours. Our emergency trolleys are also not standardized and appropriately checked or stopped, and there we have made sure that the emergency trolley is checked twice daily and that there's a person that has been allocated, and that we avail all the required supplies and equipment as per the protocol. The many policies that were also either lacking or that were expired, and then we have implemented these policies and made sure that we've improved on these policies, and we have them approved, and then we've availed all the policies and standard operating procedures in the institutions and on our intranet as well. There were also the domain of leadership and governance, and we found that in almost all our institutions, the gap that was identified was that the minutes of our
meetings with the hospitals were not indicating that the quality aspects were regularly discussed, analyzed, and that actions were taken. So we do check, we do spot check on the minutes of the meetings of the hospitals so that we check that these issues are discussed at the management meetings. In terms of operational management, the staff-patient ratios in the key areas were not according to the approved staffing plan, and that we make sure now that our nursing service managers, they allocate staff according to the plan that they have in the hospital. In terms of facilities and infrastructure, there were challenges in terms of the grounds and pathways that were not well maintained, and there were obvious safety hazards that had not been addressed. So there's the regular supervisory cleanliness rounds that are done, and that we also maintain the grounds in our institution. The records also showed that there were no nightly inspections that were done by the security guards, and there was not adequate lighting on our grounds, and there was the cars and vehicles were not searched, especially at night. So we are now keeping the records of inspection from our security personnel as well. Medical equipment. Currently, the procurement of medical equipment, those that are more than 5,000, has been centralized to the provincial office, to the health technology unit, since the 2016-17 financial year, so that we ensure that appropriate medical equipment is procured timely. All of our life support and critical medical equipment that we are procuring are now being procured with a two-year warranty, as well as a five-year maintenance contract, to avoid any delays during the call-out and when repairs are needed. Our department also, we participate in the National Transversal Contract for Medical Equipment, which speeds up the procurement, and we also have provincial tenders when needed. In terms of the maintenance of our medical equipment, we follow a mixed system because some is in-house and some are outsourced. The life support and X-ray equipment is currently outsourced to the suppliers, and the rest of the medical equipment we maintain it in-house. All our hospitals do have maintenance plans of the equipment that is according to the recommendation of the manufacturers. We, in the last financial year, we have signed service level agreements with all the suppliers of maintenance of medical equipment, and we have seen that there's been an improvement in terms of the turnaround time. We also have four functional clinical engineering workshops with a total of 30 technicians. Of that 30, 25 are bursary holders of the department. Each of our workshops are then responsible for the maintenance of medical equipment in the healthcare facilities in the district. We're still having a challenge of an inadequate budget for procurement of and maintenance of medical equipment, but for this financial year we've also requested the rollover of the funds that were committed in the last financial year. The management of pharmaceuticals, Honourable Chairperson, our department, we've outsourced the management of the pharmaceutical services in our depot. The service provider has just been appointed, and they are responsible for the warehousing, the distribution, finance and procurement, and management of the information, as well as human resource, the skills and skills development as well as transfer, and the facilities management. The department has appointed a depot manager and a finance manager in the last financial year, and this is the aim to strengthen the existing departmental team so that we can take over the management of the depot in the next 3 years. In terms of stock management of our pharmaceuticals, the National Department of Health is in the process of installing the warehouse management system in our depot, which will be completed in the second quarter of this financial year. Our hospitals are using the RS solution, which will then be linked to the system in the depot as well. All our PhD facilities are currently reporting on the availability of medicines using the stock availability system that was also implemented by the National Department. The availability of medicines, it has been fluctuating over the last 4 years. The national target should be at 95%, and you see that it is fluctuating even in the months during the year. There has been, in the last financial year, our availability of medicines when we closed the year was at 89% against the target of 95%. One of the challenges we have is that we have accruals for medicine. At the end of 2016-17 year, it was 373 million, and at the end of the last financial year, it was 364 million. And this is what leads to us being unable to attain the target of 95% at the end of the financial year. The shortage of drugs is also due to the shortage of stock that we do receive from the suppliers. There are supplier challenges, and then towards the end of the year, we also, because of the cash flow, there are delayed payments to service providers who then don't want to deliver medication to the province. We also avoid drugs expiring in our warehouse because we have now stopped keeping buffer stocks for the short-dated stock, and this also creates a shortage in the overall availability of medicines. In cases where a specific drug is not available, then our patients are given an alternative drug to ensure that there is no treatment interruption. As the Honourable MEC had mentioned in his opening remarks, the introduction of the CCMDD, or the Central Chronic Medicine Dispensing and Distribution Program, it was first piloted in Kashmir, and now we have rolled it out to the other two districts. And we have seen that there's been a lot of interest in the program, and we are doing quite well here, where we had a target that was set by the National Department of 135,000, but we actually achieved 186. And this program has assisted us to decongest the PhD facilities by enrolling the chronic patients on this program, and they can then receive the treatment at the pharmacy that's nearby to them. We have created a lot of awareness through posters and pamphlets, and also the healthcare providers are creating a demand by explaining the benefits of this program to the patients. The human resource, we just presented the top management structures in the department. You can see that there are a few vacancies in the top structure. For example, the DDG for the National Health Insurance, that's been appointed normally by the National Department. We have the DDG for the District Health Services that is vacant. The other post is the Chief Director for the Primary Health Care that has just become vacant because Ms. Mattal was appointed the DDG Clinical and Health Services, was the Chief Director for Primary Health Care. We also have the other key post is the Chief Director of Infrastructure Management that has been vacant for quite a while, and that post is funded for by the infrastructure grant. We have advertised that post on many occasions. We thought that we were going to fill it in the last, it was last year December, but unfortunately the incumbent did decline the post. We have subsequently re-advertised that post. One of our priorities in terms of our department is to ensure that we have a full team of executive management at the hospital so that we think that we have proper leadership and strategic direction in terms of our hospitals. In Mpumalanga, the executive management of a hospital comprises of a CEO, the clinical manager, the nursing service manager, finance manager, and the corporate services manager. Currently, we have managed to fill all our CEO posts except the one for Leidenberg. We have re-advertised that post because we didn't find a suitable candidate, and the appointment is planned for July 2018. All our hospitals do have clinical managers. Currently, there are two hospitals that don't have nursing service managers. The post for Rockefeller was advertised, and we have managed to fill it by July 2018. And the nursing manager for Swallow has been appointed as the CEO with effect from May, so we've advertised that post in June 2018. On slide 54, the finance managers, currently there are three vacant posts in Shongwe, Sabi, and Matibili Hospital. Here we had a re-advertisement because we could not find the suitable candidates, and our appointments should be finalized by July. The corporate manager is only Leidenberg Hospital where we've re-advertised, and we plan to put it as well in July. The slide 65 is just showing the status of appointments in the last 4 years. You can see, Honourable Chairperson and members, that there's quite a high staff turnover in our department, and you'll find that overall there was an increase in the last 4 years in terms of the appointments. However, you'll notice that the number of staff that has been lost in the lower categories, for example, the pharmacy and nursing assistants, this is the area that we need to start concentrate on. And as Audible ABC mentioned, we are starting to cut the overtime and appoint the lower category staff. The subsequent slide from slide 56, 57, it tells you by each hospital the category of staff where you'll find that there are also challenges. In terms of human resource development, which is also under human resource management, we are participating in the Cuban program or the Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro Medical Program. We have a total of 229 medical students in this program. A total of 65 have graduated since the inception of the program in 1997. This year, there are 72 students that will be returning to do the final year clinical training in South Africa. At the end of the year, we expect a further 11 to graduate. In the province, we also are sending students to go and study medicine in Russia, and currently we have 110 students in the program. The first group of four students will be completing the year 2020. This program is managed by the Department of Education in our province. As our Honourable MEC mentioned, we have one nursing college in Mpumalanga, and the total enrollment is 662 students for the four-year diploma program in various years. There are 245 students that are also on the same program in KwaZulu-Natal. We expect 190 to graduate at the end of this year, at our campus. The bursary system has been introduced at the nursing college for the first time in this financial year. Before that, our students were put on the PERSAL system. We are having a lot of challenges, Honourable Chairperson, in terms of human resources. One of them is the outdated organigram. The structure is currently being reviewed. We've managed to finalise the finance branch. The draft organigram for the provincial office is being consulted with stakeholders, and we also have the national office who is busy with the workload indicators for staffing norms in terms of the hospitals will assist us then with the organigram for our institutions. The NEC has also mentioned that we have a serious shortage of staff. We have started to introduce staffing norms and the equitable distribution of human resources. In terms of the province, we have gone and done some benchmarking with other provinces that have staffing norms, and we will then be implementing it by the second quarter. We are utilizing the overtime budget allocation, as we mentioned, for the appointment of lower category critical staff, which will then also improve the shortage. We've had many labor unrest in the year that has passed, and it was mainly due to the poor relationship that exists between the branches of organized labor and hospital management. We have intervened in that we've ensured that all our hospitals, the CEOs, have meetings at least quarterly with organized labor so that the relationship can be strengthened and enhanced. We have had safety-related challenges. We have requested the Department of Community Safety, Security and Liaison to assist with the thorough analysis of the security and health facilities and to develop a costed integrated security solution which can then be presented to the Budget and Finance Committee, because currently the Department does not have that kind of funding. The Department of Community Safety and Security, together with the Department, our NEC for Health and the NEC for Finance, they've agreed, and now we've appointed armed guards in our hospitals and our CHCs from the last week. The labour unrest experienced mainly in Sabi Hospital, Mapulaneng Hospital, Temba, Tonga and Rosbrera Hospital. One of the other issues was the overtime that was exceeding the 30%. We have requested the Department of Public Service and Administration to be exempted to pay for the payment of overtime above 30%, at least for this financial year. We are awaiting a response, but our Chief Director for Human Resources will be going there tomorrow. There's been a meeting that has been scheduled. In terms of safety, as I've mentioned already, we have put the armed guards, and we've also added additional security personnel at Mapulaneng and Middelburg Hospital. The other matter that the organized labor has been complaining about was the non-translation of our nurses into higher posts. We have a task team that has been established, which is made up of the organized labor workforce as well. And they're conducting assessment of officials that are qualified for translation, and the report is due on the 30th of June. At Temba Hospital, one of the major issues in terms of the strike was the review of the referral policy, and the task team has busy with that review, and we should have the final report by the 30th of June, and then our referral policy will be amended. One of the challenges we had here was also the reinstatement of the CEO for Temba Hospital. There was a report that was released by the Public Service Commission, the Human Rights Commission, as well as the three of them. And the recommendation was that our CEO needed to be suspended so that we could do an investigation. We have subsequently investigated. He's been given a written warning and to implement all the recommendations of the Public Service Commission. And that suspension has been lifted, and he's gone back to the hospital on the 6th of June. One of the other issues is the registrar program in terms of our human resource. Unfortunately, the province is challenging that we don't have a medical faculty or university with the health sciences in the province. We are sending some of our doctors to go and study, to specialize in the universities around the country. In the University of Pretoria, we currently have 13 registrars that we have in terms of obstetrics, orthopedics, ophthalmology, pediatrics, neurosurgery, general surgery, and there's one there that's family medicine. We've also sent 8 to the University of Witwatersrand. There are 5 in the Pharmacological Health Sciences. There's one that's studying internal medicine in the University of KwaZulu-Natal, and we have one in Cape Town as well. Our emergency services and patient transport. The purpose of emergency medical services, as our honourable members know, is to provide the pre-hospital medical services within the national norms of 15 minutes in urban and 40 minutes in rural areas, the inter-hospital transfers, disaster management and rescue, event management and sanitation transport. On slide 68, honourable members, it shows that the national norms in terms of the ambulance per population ratio and in terms of the intermediate life support and basic life support ratio. You can see the number of ambulances should be 1 to 10,000. The current status in Mpumalanga is 1 to 41,649 patients. So you can see that there's a huge deficit. We also, as a department, we have 37 EMS bases with 3 communication centers. There's 1 communication center per district. In terms of our response time, honorable members, the MEC has already alluded to, we are not doing well. You can see over the years from 2014-15 to 2017-18, our response rate has declined, and this is what also causes unhappiness among the community and leads to complaints as well as strikes by the community. The response time could not be achieved mainly due to the shortage of personnel, the shortage of ambulances, as well as the aging ambulances that we have, and there was lack of monitoring systems within the ambulance. We have subsequently also appointed 96 EMS personnel from the 1st of May this year to try and bridge the gap that exists. There were 30 ambulances that were procured last financial year and distributed, and there's an additional 17 ambulances that will be procured in this financial year. All these looks like there are 47 additional ambulances. These are basically replacing our aging fleet, so it doesn't increase the number of ambulances. The department also has 24 obstetric ambulances at the end of the last financial year. We have one per sub-district, but in some areas where the maternal deaths are higher, we have increased that to 2 obstetric ambulances. We have implemented a vehicle management system and the two-way communication radios that were installed in our new ambulances on the 1st of April, and then at the end of September, we will do an assessment to measure the effectiveness of the systems that we have put in place. Our plantation transport, the policy and the implementation plan has been finalized and was approved, and the integration of the plantation transport into EMS was planned to be piloted in the Eshangeni district at the 1st of June, but we had some challenges with organized labor that has been that is almost at the end of being resolved. So by the end of June, we plan to pilot it at the Eshangeni district. We do have an EMS college that is not really functional. We've applied for accreditation with the Health Professions Council to train the intermediate life support personnel because there's a huge shortage in the province. The expected visit is in August this year. In terms of governance and leadership, all our hospitals have hospital boards. You can see that we mentioned there are 33 hospitals. Sensibuba at the moment is sharing with Ermelo Hospital. It's basically going to be incorporated into Ermelo Hospital, and then we will re-gazette it because it will no longer be a hospital, and then we'll have 32 hospitals in the province. All our clinics have clinic committees. We also have 2 mental health review boards. We have one in Eshangeni district because it's a big district, and then we have one that's appointed for both in Kangala and Khasibande. As I mentioned earlier, also in terms of governance and leadership, we have ensured that the executive management posts of our hospitals are filled, and I've already spoken to this in the other slides. On slide 73, we've mentioned that we have a well-established audit committee and risk committee that ensures that risks are managed, their internal controls, and these are adequate and effective, and that our governance processes are implemented. Our audit committee is very active, and we hold meetings on a quarterly basis and ad hocly when needed. The following items are standing items and are discussed in all our ordinary meetings. It's the financial management, it's the risk management, performance information, internal audit reports, litigation reports, labor relations, irregular, fruitless, wasteful expenditure, as well as unauthorized expenditure progress reports. We do have challenges as well in the governance and leadership area in our department. One of them is the inadequate skills capacity at all our management levels. We're doing training on financial management, labor relations, and human resource management. We've also developed and implemented a manual for the induction of hospital CEOs. And for the first time, we are also sending our operational managers to be trained on the PhD Management and Leadership Program at the University of Stellenbosch. We've sent 30 operational managers in this financial year. There's also poor functionality of our clinic committees and hospital boards. We have designed a focus training on of the clinic committees and hospital boards, and we aim to recruit suitable and qualified hospital board members that will assist the management at the hospital. We, in terms of governance, we also have a bit of a challenge where we do not have a manual on the functions and the index of records that are held by the public body. This is in terms of the FIAF, and the next one is also in terms of the administrative decision-making areas so that we comply with the requirements of project. So we have drafted a manual which is out for comment, and then we will approve it. And then we will also request the Department of Communities of Culture, Sport and Recreation to assist us to translate it into three official languages. On slide 76, we mentioned that we don't have an ethics management strategy and implementation plan. We've developed a draft, and it will then be implemented. We also don't have the risk, the corruption risk assessment report, which will also be done once our plan has been implemented or has been approved. In terms of financial management systems in our department, in the last financial year, we did spend 99.4% of the allocated budget. We've also managed to reduce the audit qualification matters from 7 in 2015-16 to 3 in 2016-17 financial year. The ones that remained in the last financial year were the immovable tangible capital assets, the movable tangible capital assets, and the irregular expenditure. The following committees were established to, in order to prevent the irregular expenditure from recurring. At the hospital, we have the hospital finance committees, we have district acquisition committees, we have the economizing committee, the provincial office, and of course the bid committees. The department has also established the provincial financial misconduct committees, and we have district financial misconduct and loss control committees. The overall responsibility of these committees is to investigate and preside over all reported incidences of financial misconduct and losses that have been suffered by the department, and then make recommendations to the health, to the head of health regarding the actions that should be taken. We have managed to reduce our irregular expenditure opening balance from 6.4 billion to 3.3 billion in the last financial year, which for us is quite an achievement. All the districts and hospitals have financial and supply chain management delegations of up to 500,000. The budgeting and expenditure management has been decentralized to the districts and the hospitals, except for the budget allocation and the payment of some of the key accounts, such as waste management, the pharmaceuticals, our fleet management, telecommunications, blood services, and NHLS. We've identified these key accounts for protection against any under-budgeting, and we make sure that we do timely payments so that we can receive the discounts, for example, for in NHLS if there's early payments, and we prevent the interest on the interest-bearing account. We have a challenge, Honorable Chairperson and members, in terms of the underspending on the conditional grant, and this is mainly due to the medical equipment. But we finalized the specifications of the procurement of medical and allied equipment, and we're also strengthening our planning and communication with our sister department and the implementing agent of Departments of Public Works, Roads and Transport. Our expenditure for the conditional grant, for this year we are ensuring that we are monitoring it bi-weekly with the aim to unlock any challenges and revise our business plan during the budget adjustment period. As mentioned, we did have a qualified audit report, and we are strengthening and implementing policies and procedures so that this year we can receive an unqualified. There are still some, we have inadequate finance personnel in our districts and hospitals, and we plan to appoint competent and qualified financial personnel in the districts and hospitals in the next over the MTA period, because currently the budget constraints does not allow us to appoint all our staff. We also are placing qualified finance interns in the districts and hospitals, and this should be done by the 30th of September. There is still a lot of unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the department. We are implementing consequence management through the financial misconduct committees, and we do conduct the continuous training on supply chain management prescripts and other finance legislation and policies. Although we do reach the target of collecting revenue, but there's still under-collection of money that are due to the state. We are implementing and monitoring the patient administration and revenue policy, and we are implementing consequence management through the financial misconduct committee. The high accumulation of accrual, contingent liability, and the department debts and funds to that need to be surrendered to Treasury remains a challenge for our department. And in slide 83, you can see that the interventions that we have put in place is that we review and implement and we monitor the accruals of the 2017-18 and the strategies that we have put in place to reduce these accruals. We also are mediating on the identified litigation cases that the department faces, and we are reviewing and implementing the monitoring, the strategy that we have to collect money. We also do reconciliation, that's our fund. And finally, we're collecting revenue for the first time on emergency medical services, because we do provide these EMS services during events in the province. We have a huge challenge as you know, the whole country is facing problems with finances, but we have been unable to fund all our critical accounts within the appropriated budget. We have requested assistance and support from the provincial treasury as well as the National Department of Health, and as a department we are implementing efficiencies to reduce the health costs. For example, in terms of patient food, we have now standardized the menu as well as the prices. We are using the Mpumalanga Regional Training Trust for maintaining of our hospitals rather than appointing service providers. And as the Honourable MC mentioned, we're going to be integrating the plantation transport into EMS for efficiencies as well. Honourable Chairperson, on slide 85 to 86 and 87, it's talking to the accruals that the department has in this financial year, and you can see on slide 87, the main accrual was on the medicine, which was at 364 million. Our total accrual for the year is 842 million, and of this, most of it was in medicine, the laboratory services, the infrastructure projects where we have our new hospitals that the MEC mentioned, our blood products, medical waste, and medical and allied equipment. This forms more than 75% of our accrual, and you can see that these are the non-negotiables, which also pose a challenge. The referral system, our departments, we are still developing both the regional and tertiary services in our three regional and two tertiary hospitals. As a province, we are still very reliant on the Gauteng province for the provision of complex specialist services, and also those services that are not offered in our province due to the shortage of specialists. Our regional hospitals, they are also not providing a full complement of the 8 core secondary services. And you'll see in the next slide as well that all the Amalo hospital is providing the 8 core domains of a regional hospital. These disciplines are largely headed by Cuban doctors, which we rely a lot on. Our two tertiary hospitals, which is Witbank and Rosarera, they are still seeing self-referrals and they treat patients with minor ailments. And of course, you know, this is too costly if these type of patients are seen at a tertiary hospital. In the vicinity of Rosarera, there's no district hospital, and this then leads to Rosarera Hospital admitting level 1 patients. Our focus currently is to strengthen the existing disciplines in our tertiary hospital instead of adding new disciplines. Due to the shortage of specialists, some of our disciplines only have 1 or 2 consultants, and then to even cover the calls for the month to get coverage is also not feasible. You can see in slide 91, that in our regional hospitals, which is Temba, Mapulaneng, and Amalo, most of the specialists that are there are Cuban specialists. You'll find that in the disciplines that I mentioned in slide 92, there's not many specialists. There's either 1 or 2 in some cases. At this point in time, it's also worth us mentioning that Tinswalo Hospital is our district hospital, and that's the only hospital that has a forensic psychiatrist. They manage patients. She manages patients that are referred to from Mapulaneng Hospital, and she does outreach services to the correctional services so that she can assist the waiting trial prisoners. This has assisted greatly because we now no longer send these patients to West Copies in Gauteng. The core specialty for tertiary hospitals on slide 93, you can see even in our tertiary hospitals, we are relying a lot on the Cuban specialists to provide the tertiary services. On slide 94 is the specialities, and you can see even the number of specialists that we have in our specialities are very few. The ENT, we had a specialist, but that unfortunately he resigned at Woodbeck Hospital, and currently there are no specialists in ENT and urology when we were providing this service before. In terms of our referral system, we're still experiencing a challenge where our patients are bypassing the PhD facilities. And one of the main reasons is because of the doctors visiting the facilities. So we are rotating our community service health professionals from the hospitals to the PhD facilities as well. There's a shortage of specialists in the referral hospitals, as I've alluded to already. We have increased the number of doctors by adding 5 more on the register program to top the 28 that are currently training. We're in the process of entering into MOUs with academic institutions and other provinces so that they can also assist us with the training of registrars. We've also noticed that there are some specialists that when they qualify but they want to remain in the provinces and they don't have the post. So we are hoping that we will be able to to improve in terms of our recruitment and retention strategy, and that they will be attracted to our province. We also have inadequate clinical skills in the referring hospitals, so we are rotating the doctors from our district hospitals through the tertiary hospitals for anesthetics, orthopedics, obstetrics and gynae and general surgery for 8 weeks per discipline, so that they will then be able to be more confident to do some of the cases in their hospitals instead of referring them to higher levels of care. Also, our medical equipment in some of our hospitals are not fully utilized due to the shortage of specialists. For example, in Temple Hospital, we have a CT scan that was installed, but unfortunately it's not used because there's no radiologist. The department is engaging, as I mentioned earlier, with the universities and other provinces to assist us with the recruitment of specialists. We're also engaging the private sector radiologists so that they'll be able to assist us with the sessions. Honourable Chairperson, although the medical legal claims and the management of litigations was not requested, we thought it would be important to mention it because it is one of the major challenges that faces our department. And currently the continued liability at the end of the last financial year was over 7.5 billion. The high volume of our medical legal cases are related especially to obstetrics and gynae and to orthopedic cases. In terms of obstetrics and gynae, a single claim can cost anything between 12 to 40 million. So in terms of orthopedic cases, also our claims range between 7.5 to 12 million. We've also had quite a few adverse event cases that have led to litigation in our hospital. In slide 99, we are saying that to date we have 158 cases that are over 3 billion that have been reported just for cerebral palsy that have been suffered. These are cases with high amount claims for future medical expenses, and this can pose a challenge, this poses a challenge to our department. In Mpumalanga, the litigation cases are managed by the Office of the State Attorney, as well as the private service providers that are appointed by the Office of the Premier to provide expert and strategic support to both forensic, special, and other investigation support services, which includes litigation. We have the litigation management strategy that we have developed, and we've noticed that once we've started the mediation, we can see that we are finalizing some of the cases within a reasonable turnaround period, and these save legal costs for the department. The mediation has proven to be flexible as compared to the rigid court processes, and since we initiated this in 2016-17 financial year, there were 7 cases that we've managed to finalize with a turnaround time of 3 to 12 months, and for these 7 cases we paid a total of 1.9 million. You can see that through the court orders between 2014 and 15 to the last financial year, we have paid more than 123 million for medical claims in the province. We do have this high volume of medical claims, and our interventions is that we conduct the continuous training of our health professionals so that they adhere to the guidelines and protocols to ensure patient safety. We implement consequence management where it is needed. The district clinical specialists continue to strengthen the training of health professionals on the management of obstetric emergencies. We are conducting clinical audits so that we can improve the management of clinical cases, and we are improving the medical record management in facilities through the provision of training, the appointment of staff, and our improved infrastructure. We are looking at providing a provincial archiving centre for our medical records. In terms of risk management, we have a risk management unit which identifies and coordinates the management of the departmental risks and fraud prevention. We have an established risk committee that meets quarterly, and the risk committee chairperson may report to the audit committee on a quarterly basis. It's also an internal risk management committee that monitors the implementation of our hospital risk registers on a quarterly basis. The chief risk officer in our department is appointed as the ethics officer, who also ensures compliance to financial disclosures and the RLOS application. Laundry services in the province. We currently have 18 laundries in our 33 hospitals. We have a regional laundry in Vietnam Hospital, which covers the Khasi Bandi district. We have regional laundry in Middleburg Hospital, which covers the Ngandala district, and then we have in-house laundry in quite a few of our other hospitals as listed. The in-house laundry for Rock Ferreira, Matikwana, and Ermelo Hospital will be completed at the end of this quarter, and then there will be 21 laundries in the province. The ultimate objective in our department is to ensure that all our hospitals have in-house laundries. Currently, those that don't have in-house laundries are washing at the nearby or the regional laundries, and there's no outsourcing of laundry services. We are still faced with the challenge of insufficient linen and patient clothing. We are hoping that the additional laundries will assist in this regard, and we've also centralized the procurement of linen and patient clothing to the district so that they then procure for all the hospitals. But poor maintenance of our laundry equipment also remains a challenge, and we are implementing the plan, the laundry maintenance and service plan. We've also engaged the Department of Public Works to penalize and terminate poor performing service providers, and this has happened on more than one occasion. In terms of security services, I think we've spoken quite a bit of it, but in our province of Malanga, the security services is a competency of the Department of Community Safety, Security and Liaison. We already mentioned the experiences that we are facing both for patients and staff, and there's been a number of incidences that have been reported where it's involving attack of our staff, which leads to labor unrest as well as our staff refusing to work night duty. There's also been an increase in the community unrest, which leads to patients and staff being endangered in our facilities. And as mentioned, we now have armed guards in our hospitals and our CHCs. The department is also creating awareness on community radio stations on the need to protect the health facilities and the staff. The NMCs and health, the clinic committees and our hospital boards are also being engaged, and they create awareness in the communities on the importance of our health professionals. In terms of the information technology, all our hospitals and the 277 of the 287 PACE facilities have broadband connection. In our hospitals, we are using the PACE system for the demographic patient registration, billing and clinical modules, and we have a total of 1.6 million patients on the system. In our hospitals, as mentioned earlier, we are using the RX solution for drug stock management. We have also improved the patient file management process in our PACE facilities through the implementation of the health patient registration system by the National Department of Health. Currently, there are just over 2 million patients that are registered on this system against the uninsured population of 3.9. The challenges in terms of the IT is the inadequate health information system as well as the lack of an electronic record management system. We will be upgrading the PACE system to web-based, and in terms of the electronic record management system, this will be part of the NHIS and the National Department and as is their competency. The network infrastructure within our hospitals is old and it needs to be upgraded. We are upgrading the network infrastructure in phases over the MTS because of budget constraints. In phase one, we are going to use the Barberton, Woodbank, Tonga, Sinswala, and the new Samuel Hospital, which should be upgraded by the 31st of December this year. And then we'll have phase two and phase three over the next 2 years. The management of healthcare waste. We've outsourced the management of healthcare waste, and in our environmental health, the subdirectorate monitors the contract that we currently have. The environmental health practitioners at the sub-district level, they manage it at facility level. The challenge that we experience in this is that there's non-compliance to the national core standards on the storage areas in our health facilities for healthcare risk waste. So all our new health facilities that are being built, we ensure that they are compliant to the storage areas, and then over the MTF, we're slowly starting to replace or to improve on those that are existing. We have experienced currently a challenge with illegal dumping of healthcare risk waste by some of the private health practitioners, and then this leads to negative publicity for the department, where it is thought that it's the department that is the cause of this. So we have engaged the municipalities so that we monitor and penalize the culprits in this regard. In terms of planning and maintenance of our infrastructure, Honourable Chairperson, on slide 117, I've mentioned that we've adopted the infrastructure delivery management system as the vehicle for infrastructure planning, delivery and operations, and this outlines very clearly the roles of both the Department of Health and Public Works and their mandates. The Department of Public Works is the custodian of the immovable assets and as well as our implementing agent. Also, Provincial Treasury fulfills the oversight role and enhance the performance of infrastructure in the province. Our health facility revitalization grant on slide 118, you can see that we have started to improve from 2014-15, 16-17, the expenditure was improving, but unfortunately in the last financial year, we have not spent well on the health infrastructure grant. We've only managed to spend 83% of our grant. And this is attributed to the late appointment of contractors in some of our facilities, both at national level as well as provincial level. We've also had delays in completion of the planning and design and the appointment of contractors at the province, as well as at the national level. However, from the underspending of 55 million in the rebate grant, we have requested for a rollover of 31 million because these have already been committed for the medical equipment. In terms of the expanded public works program, we also have a grant here. We have been allocated $3 million in the last financial year, and from this 87% was spent. Unfortunately, it was due to the fact that the liability period was only going to be ending in May because the project started quite late, so we have asked for this to be rolled over as well. What we thought was worth mentioning, Honourable Chairperson, is that in terms of the FMME support and the local beneficiation, we have 16 cooperatives that have been appointed for subcontracting work from the department. The next few slides, Honourable Chairperson, I'm not going to go into huge detail, but these are the infrastructure priorities in the department in terms of the hospitals and the different progress that has been made in terms of the planning as well as the construction. So from 121, it talks about the planning in the different clinics and hospitals for the 2018 financial year. In slide 123, you can see that there's also some clinics. Some of our clinics, like for example, from 8 to 10, which is in Shrazache, Okuzaka, and Balfour, these are new clinics that are being constructed, and it's being done by the National Department of Health as part of the NHI. Slide 124, it continues with all the facilities that are currently under construction. On slide 125, these are the new hospitals, the four high-tech hospitals that the Honourable MEC mentioned, which is Mamatlake, Mapulemeng. The next one on slide 126 is Bethal Hospital and then Middleburg Hospital. These are the four hospitals that are currently under construction in design. And then you'll find that Drogheda Hospital, which was under revised previously, we've had some challenges with compliance, so we are completing the statutory work so that we can get our certificate. The rest of it is the slide in terms of infrastructure is listing all the clinics and hospitals that are undergoing construction in this financial year. It's also telling you those projects that are completed at the end of the last financial year. So you can see that the province is focusing a lot on improving the infrastructure in our province. On slide 137, we've listed the challenges that we are facing where we have an insufficient budget for maintenance, which does pose a challenge because there is lack of maintenance in some of our institutions. We have done some reprioritization of the infrastructure fund so that we can move from capital to goods and services, but we will still be waiting for approval from the Budget and Finance Committee in the province. There's also been poor performance of term contractors and service providers. We've engaged the Department of Public Works to penalize and terminate the poor performing contractors, and this has been done in some of the contracts. We have a challenge with interrupted water supply in the province. We are drilling boreholes and installing water tanks in our facilities. We've also improved the relationship between the facilities and municipalities so that we are prioritized in terms of water provision. And our department has also procured its own water tanker, which then assists the hospitals when they need it. TB management in Mpumalanga, we are providing it in 5 hospitals, which is Witbank TB, Staddington, Sesifuba, Barberton, and Bongani Hospital. As I mentioned earlier, Sesifuba is being incorporated into Ermelo Hospital, and once it's completed, it will then be removed as a hospital from the Gazette. Our hospitals have various support from allied health workers in the TB hospitals. The current status in terms of decentralization of TB per district and the areas of operation, you can see that in all our 3 districts on slide 140 and 141, we are decentralizing the management of TB to the clinics and the hospitals. In terms of Woodbank TB Hospital, that is our central unit, and we've identified the central unit based on the criteria that are listed below. And in the decentralized units in the 3 districts, Staddington, Sesifuba, Bongani, and Barberton TB, and these are identified also on the criteria that are listed on slide 143. In slide 144, we've spoken about the TB default rate and the prevalence. You can see in terms of the TB cure rate, the department has more or less remained static. We have not shown much improvement. In terms of the TB success rate as well, it's remained more or less static. The TB default rate, you can see there's a very slight improvement, but it seems to be seesawing as well, and we have to place more emphasis in terms of TB management in the province. We've had a challenge of the infrastructure in our TB hospitals because they're quite dilapidated. Staddington and Barberton TB hospitals, these are owned by Santa, and we have challenges in terms of the maintenance because it's part of the SLA and Santa is supposed to maintain it, but we have major challenges in that regard. We are busy in engagements with them, and it seems to be quite promising that we will buy the 2 TB hospitals from Santa. We were considering relocating the Stapleton TB Hospital to one of our CHCs that is not fully utilized, but that will be, that decision will be pending the procurement of the TB Hospital Trump Center. Our TB cure rate is decreasing due to patients not producing sputum at the end of the 6 months, because they start to feel better and they don't come. So as we mentioned earlier, we'll be strengthening the counseling of our TB patients. The TB success rate is remaining a challenge, but we are using our ward-based outreach team to trace the defaults in the community. And our TB MDR success rate is still remaining a challenge because our patients present late and some of them even die before they complete the treatment. There is a new short-term TB regime that we've introduced so that we can improve our treatment success. The state of DHS in strengthening the PHC, we are implementing the district health system as the vehicle to deliver private health care, and this is aligned with the National District Health System Policy Framework. We are faced with the burden of the quadruple disease as the other provinces are as well. And in slide 138, we mentioned what the tests or the programs that we are implementing to address the burden. On slide 139, I'm going into a little more detail in terms of the PHC re-engineering and the five streams that we are implementing. As already mentioned, we should be establishing 560 ward-based outreach teams so that they can cover the 402 municipal wards. To date, we have 235 teams that have been established, and they cover just half of the wards, and they form part of the Operation Lugas de Sabente. In this financial year, we will be establishing an additional 112 ward-based outreach teams. As we mentioned all over, you'll find that the limited budget does remain a hindrance so that we can appoint additional professional nurses as team leaders, but our intervention is that we are allocating the professional nurses from the health facilities to lead these 112 teams. In terms of school health, we have increased the number of school health teams from 9 in 2013-14 to 68, and we will appoint a further 33 teams in 2018 financial year. In terms of 153, the district clinical specialist team, we are still struggling under the chairperson to be able to have fully fledged teams in all our districts. It's only the district of Ekranjani that has a full team, and this team does outreach services to the other two districts as well. In terms of the IV clinic realization and maintenance, the number of clinics that have reached the IV clinic status increased from 19 in 2015-16 to 87. At the end of the last financial year, and our plan is that all of the safety facilities must reach ideal clinic status by the end of the next financial year. The following improvements have been noted since the ideal clinic realization and maintenance is that the image of our safety facilities have improved, and in terms of the feedback that we get from our communities regarding the performance of our facilities through the dashboard system in the clinics shows that there has been improvement in some of our six priority areas. Also, the infrastructure enhancement in some of the health facilities are creating more space and a conducive environment for both the patients and the staff. The poorly maintained infrastructure also still remains a challenge to us to realize the ideal clinic, but we are making sure that all our newly constructed clinics and CHCs are built according to the ideal clinic status. We've also set aside $8 million for the infrastructural quick wins for the ideal clinics that have been identified in this financial year. In terms of the shortage of medical equipment, we are procuring medical equipment for $15 million for the 72 clinics that are identified for this financial year. Mental health services, Honorable Chairperson, the province is currently having 106 beds. However, the need is quite huge. We need a minimum of 1,214 acute beds, 434 medium to long-term beds, and 867 community beds. The provision of the mental health package is delivered to the users at different levels, so the community by the ward-based outreach team. Also, all our primary healthcare facilities provide the services. Our 25 hospitals conduct 72-hour assessments. And in case of substance abuse, the 28 hospitals, they do provide detoxification to the clients that are booked by the Department of Social Development. Our department provides short to medium-term services only in three designated facilities, in Droplea, in Swallow, and Wilton. The chronic mental health facilities in the province, where this is rendered through the Sertsuka Mental Health Care Center, which we are contracting, and they have 250 beds. The mental health services for children is rendered by Baneng Hospital in Gauteng, which has 20 beds. We have our draft plan for a psychiatric hospital as per the SOPA pronouncement in 2015, but unfortunately our budget challenges do not allow us to commence with this hospital. The Mpumalanga Economic Aid Agency in the department, or in the province, has been tasked with establishing the infrastructure fund, and if they manage to do that in this financial year, then the hospital will be one of the major priorities. In terms of communicable diseases, as I've mentioned already, we did have an outbreak of malaria, and I won't go into detail. But just to say that in terms of the key interventions, we've appointed 330 temporary malaria spray operators to identify to spray the 560,000 identified structures. We have a memorandum of understanding which we've signed with the Limpopo Department of Health for the provision of services which include communicable diseases so that we synchronize our spraying. And we're also in collaboration with our neighboring countries in terms of the Musaswa Agreement, that's in Mozambique, South Africa, and Swaziland for the management of malaria. As a province, we also experienced the challenges with listeriosis, and to date we have 47 laboratory confirmed listeriosis with 12 deaths. The number of new cases has decreased dramatically since the indicated products were recalled. We are collaborating very well with the private sector and our sister department in managing and controlling the cases. Eye care services is a huge problem in our province, and even though we are providing the service, the outcome and the performance is not good, because we are experiencing a critical shortage of the cataract surgeons and the theatre time for the cataract operations. As you can see, Honourable Chairperson, the number of patients that have been screened, that have received the spectacles, the refraction, as well as the cataract operation, have decreased over the last four financial years. On slide 162, we further highlighted that the number of cataracts that have been removed has decreased almost by 50%, as well as the screening. We have a shortage of ophthalmologists in the province, and currently there's only one in Woodbend. So we are headhunting, as well as one of the registrars is also specializing in ophthalmology, which we then hope will ensure that the province has a specialist for 4 years at least. Also, in terms of the insufficient theatre time, we are busy with the process of establishing a permanent eye care centre at Tongo Hospital in the province, and this should be completed by the end of the next financial year. In terms of chronic diseases and geriatrics, the number of clients that we're screening for hypertension and diabetes has increased dramatically, and we are hoping that this will continue to increase in terms of our screening. We have had a delayed review of patients on the chronic medication due to the inadequate coverage of doctors in the primary health care, but we are contracting professional doctors, and we are also increasing outreach to PHA facilities so that these patients don't have to come and wait at our hospitals. In terms of HIV/AIDS and STIs, we are providing the service through the multisectoral approach, the provincial implementation plan, and the 1990 strategy has been adopted to accelerate the HIV and TB testing. You can see that the number of, on slide 166, in terms of the indicators, that there is a steady increase in the HIV testing to intensify the community testing and campaign. We, for the first time last year, we saw a huge increase in the medical circumcision rate, and this was due to the big angoma that was in our province last year. So we say that one of the challenges we experience is that although you can see there's an increase in the number of clients and remaining on ARDS, the target still is not met due to some of the data management challenges that we are having. We've appointed data capture at facility level, and we're training them on the tier.net, and this will improve our data management as well as our indicators. In terms of maternal child, women, youth, health, and nutrition, on slide 168, you can see that in terms of maternal health, the indicators have gradually increased, not a lot, but it is showing an upward trend, which for us is very encouraging. Our immunization coverage, we've reached the 90% target that we have set for ourselves as well. On slide 169, it's the same indicator that I mentioned earlier, where you can see that there's slight improvement. The only one that is giving us a concern is the maternal mortality infant-to-infant ratio, and we have intensified our efforts to improve that. And slide 170 is basically the narrative that I've just explained, and then we'll go to slide 172, where it's talking about the challenges where we have maternal deaths that are mainly due to the non-pregnancy-related infections, which include TB and pneumonia, and these are comorbid with HIV and AIDS. So we are also strengthening our screening of pre-existing conditions, and we are integrating the heart and the sexual reproductive health services. Our neonatal deaths due to prematurity, interpartum management, and guidelines are not or as follows, which contributes to death. So we are stressing the use of the antenatal steroids in our PhD facilities, and we are conducting training both in basic antenatal care as well as the monitoring of our antenatal care graphs. On slide 173, it's also talking about the increased number of early neonatal deaths due to birth asphyxia, and we are conducting intensive training on the health baby breed, as well as the management of sick and small neonates for the professional nurses that are working in our labor wards and our neonatal units. In terms of the increased number of neonates that are dying from infection, which remains a challenge, we are promoting the good infection prevention and control measures, and we ensure that there's a constant supply of infection prevention materials in all our facilities. The last topic on the chairperson was the progress towards adoption of the community health workers. The model that each province adopts is quite different, but the one that we are adopting in our province is that we are using for the sourcing of the community health workers. This is done through contracting of the NPOs, who in turn then contract the community health workers on behalf of the department. We will continue with this method of contracting until the dispensation of the community health workers is finalized by the National Health Council. Currently, there are 300 NPOs that are contracted by the department, who in turn have contracted 6,981 community health workers. There are two sources of funding for the NPOs in our province. It's namely the social sector EPWP grant and the HIV and AIDS grant. The stipend for the EPWP is 2,068 per community health worker per month, and the paid stipend for the HIV and AIDS grant is 2,200. Although they're not compliant to the minimum wage of 3,500, there has been an improvement, Honourable Chairperson and members, in the stipend amount from 1,000, which was being paid in 2007, to 1,500, and then from 1st of April 2018, it has increased to the 268 or the 2,200. One of the challenges that is experienced in terms of the community health workers is the high literacy rate, especially with the current beneficiaries of the NPOs. And the program is unable to attract incumbents and matric because this is an informal means of employment. In terms of Operation Sukumasake that was mentioned, in our province, we have the Operation Bugasa Sebente that was launched by Mpumalanga in 2016. And on slide 178, it says that, you know, each of our war rooms is a ward-based program, which is led by a ward counselor, and our department participates in the key activities through our ward-based PHC outreach team. The major role that our teams play is to identify during the household visits the referrals of such cases to the relevant departments, such as social development, human settlement, or to our health facilities if there are health-related challenges. We have a total of 235 ward-based outreach teams, and we're going to increase it by further 112. So, Honourable Chairperson, the key decisions that we require from the committee is to note and give input on the status of hospitals in the Mpumalanga province so as to assist us in improving the quality of care that is provided to the people of Mpumalanga. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. What we will do now, we will take questions from members. I think we have noted some of the areas that we appreciate if we can clarify so that we are then able to have a full understanding of the situation. Thank you very much. Over to you, Honourable Member. The Honourable Mapanga, Honourable Wilson, and Kim McCoy, Honourable Gonzo, and Honourable Mayor, and Kim McCoy.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Greetings to the House. Firstly, let me welcome the overview by the MEC and the presentation by the HOP. Chair, 2 weeks back, if I'm not mistaken, it's 2 weeks back, we had an opportunity or privilege to meet with the Office of the Health Standard Compliance. The OHSC report says that mostly all the provinces have not improved performance compared to their baseline audit. So my question to the department, I want to check if whether you have an opportunity to meet with the Office of the Health Standard Compliance and discuss about these issues. What is the provincial department dealing with the OHSCs as far as any changes being implemented, if you have met with them, discuss. And the other question, Chair, it's pertaining to the healthcare waste management. And I think, Chair, this is one of the issues which has been send to the department to come and present about. But if I was listening attentively, I didn't hear the department speaking about the issue of the waste. Nonetheless, my question is, Chair, I just want to check whether the department in your province is fully complying with the following act as required by the legislation. The NEMA being the National Environmental Management Act, and the NEMWA being the National Environmental Management Waste Act. Are they standards in place to deal with healthcare waste adequately? My other questions, Chair, will be on slide 24. It seems like the malaria fatality rate is the only one that increased for the past 2 years. I just want to find out why and what new anomalies were experienced. How can this issue be sorted, and going forward, what contingency plan do you have, seeing that weather conditions have now become unpredictable? On slide 30, the Ehlanzeni overall performance is satisfactory, with only a few exceptions within the district, such as Matibidi, which has continued to drop performance-wise. Why and how will it be rectified? Tonga Hospital. Chair, if I'm ill, I'm being serviced by this hospital. It's under my ward, in fact. Tonga has maintained a status quo of 70%. Why? There is no improvement, because the previous year it was a very good percentage, and that other year Because our people are expecting that the healthy care standard is always arising. Finally, Chef, it's with regard to the referral system. The challenge is with regard to patient bypass PH3 facility was said to be addressed by 1 April 2018. I just want to check if that target was met. Thanks.
Then after
I thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation. I just would like to first, even though I have a lot of questions to ask, but they are definitely meant for Mpumalanga Province Health, and we need to engage you today. Number one, based on the MEC introductory information, I just would like to ask, mention was made of the patients jumping from, say for an example, they were supposed to go to clinics, but rather than going to clinics, they go to the hospitals. My question is, was there ever a means made to find out what causes that? Why don't people go to, the patients go to the clinics? What is it that is going wrong in the clinics that makes the patients to go rather to the hospitals? So I just would like to know, what is it that has been done to investigate this jumping from the clinics where they are supposed to be to the hospitals? The second one is in connection with information that was given to us about the outbreak. The presenter there gave us information about the outbreak of malaria, 949 the patients, whereby 96 deaths were reported, as compared to the information that we got from the investigation that was done and presented to us. To say on page 87 of that book, the mention was made that a score of 19% was given to Mpumalanga province in connection with their prepared level of preparedness for handling a disaster situation. The disaster preparedness is at a score of 19%. Which is in actual fact contradictory to the information as it was given to us. According to information given, it seems as though the province is ready to handle any disaster situation. Like I say, it's contradictory. Can I get in actual fact an explanation of the contradictory information as reflected here? And another information is in connection with the unavailability of beds. Unavailability of beds for the patients that needs to be admitted in hospitals throughout Mpumalanga as a province. But I would refer to an example of Evanga Hospital. And I can also maybe show you some information as I have seen it, where you find patients sleeping on the floor, admitted in a hospital, but sleeping on the floor. And yes, you have given some details here of usable bed vessels and usable beds. Maybe you can explain to us to say, if you have 150 beds, for an example, in a certain hospital, only to find that 120 is used, what is happening to those 30, and why are those 30 beds that are available not used in that particular hospital? Ivanda is just one of the examples that I can give, because we recently had a march to this hospital to render a memorandum to them, and one of the complaints was about the shortage of beds in that particular hospital. So you can check in Excel slide 33 in your book, 33, but there is in actual fact unavailability of beds there. And then I move on to slide 52. Slide 52 that deals with suitability of candidates for the key positions. Mentioned when the presentation was made, mention was made of the posts of key positions being advertised, but in the ultimate end, you were not able to get the suitable candidates to fill that vacant position. My problem is the unsuitability of the candidates. It can last for years and years. So how do you, as a province, intend to solve that problem? Because it's not a problem that is mentioned now. Even last year, I think there was a mention of unsuitability of candidates to occupy key positions. Because my problem is, if we have a lot of vacant positions in those high-level positions, how will we be able to can run the province with the vacant positions? And the other one is based on slide 59. Slide 59, where you mentioned the armed guards. Even in the introduction, a mention was made of hiring of armed guards in hospitals. I don't know whether it's also happening in clinics, because the problem, as it was mentioned, does not only apply to the hospitals, it can also apply to clinics as well. So my question is, previously you had security guards in hospitals and clinics, so what has happened to them? Are they an addition? Is the armed guard an addition to the securities in hospitals in Mpumalanga province as well as clinics? And my question would also be, are they, what happens to the security? Are the securities in hospitals and clinics outsourced and insourced? If they are outsourced, why is it a problem for you as Mpumalanga province to insert the security? Slide 91, 92, and I think it's 93, specialist of doctors. I'm seeing here throughout, you have Cuban doctors, you have Ethiopian doctors, you have Tunisian doctors. My question is, what about our own doctors? Don't we have doctors in South Africa who can fill up those positions? And if they are not available, why? Have you ever, in actual fact, tried to investigate why we can't have our own doctors filling in those positions? And then the general questions would be, number one, the waiting time. There's generally a long waiting period experienced in hospitals throughout. Patients can wait as far as more than 5 hours, from the administration to the last attempt where they get their medicine. And then if it's a problem that runs through all the hospitals, what is it that can be done, or what is it that the mechanism, the real thing that addresses, or the real way of solving this problem. And we also have had some complaints from caregivers, right? Some of them that have worked in hospitals for 30 years, even though it's not part of the slide, but it's some of the problems that are encountered in Mpumalanga province. To say you have people who are working in hospitals for more than 20 years, who earn a salary of 3,000 a month. To date, even in 2018, they are still being paid 3,000 a month, which is not good. I can just, in example, maybe you can check through the hospitals that we have visited. Another problem is the one that was reported by specifically from Bushbuck Ridge, being specific to Mapulani Hospital, where the quality of the food is not good. And they complain to say there's a problem of nutrition. Nutrition means maybe the standard of the food, you know, maybe it's not well prepared, and so on. So what is your response on that? And the following one is about the attitude. The attitude of the staff that we have in hospitals, more specifically the attitude of nurses. And the attitude of nurses does not only occur in hospitals, it occurs throughout, even in clinics themselves. The manner in which they handle patients, the manner in which they talk to the patients needs to be attended to. It's more on a negative attitude than a positive attitude. And that definitely can cause the jumping from the clinic to the hospital per se. And another one is about the lack of privacy for people living with HIV and AIDS. It's not only happening in hospitals. It's also experienced in clinics, whereby, say for an example, in a certain clinic, the nurse would announce in front of everybody who's there to say, people who are suffering from HIV and AIDS are not supposed to go and queue here. Just go and queue in another line. I mean, in front of everybody. Then it means the privacy of the patient is infringed here. What is your take on this? Have you ever done a research based on this to arrive on the truth of this matter? And if ever it's found to be true, so what is it that you are doing to keep such information? And then the other one is, they have mentioned also from the response that we have from the community, to say it takes time. Sometimes it can take 2 weeks for patients who are suffering to be transported, say for an example from Mpumalanga to Pretoria, waiting period to get treatment in Pretoria. A patient waits for 2 weeks. And then the other one is an email that I got from the dentist in from Mpumalanga in general. Maybe it's the last one that I'm going to try to. Yes, it's a brief request for assistance from Mpumalanga. This is your problem. But from the dentists who are saying from the 1st of January 2017, new commuted overtime policy for health workers was implemented by the Department of Health. However, it left out oral health workers, and this led to CEOs at various public health care facilities instantly cutting overtime for dentists in all hospitals in Mpumalanga and several other provinces. And then they said, we must point out that during the formulation of this new committed overtime policy, at no stage were dentists consulted, as opposed to medical practitioners who have been strongly represented by SAMA throughout. And as you know, this has also an impact on the patients themselves. So what is your take on this, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for your presentation. It is sometimes quite relieving when we have presentations where people are prepared to admit they have challenges. However, I think your challenges are actually larger than possibly you've made out to be. And when I read the OHSC report on what's happening in Mpumalanga, it's actually quite disturbing. Alongside the PERFA, Mpumalanga scored the lowest average score, and your clinics only scored 44%, your average score was only 48%, public health scores regressed to 39%, operational management scores regressed to 38%. And I think what's really, really scary for me is that 35% of your facilities at CHC's clinic and hospital showed 34% showed critically non-compliant, according to the OHSC. 26 of CHC's and 12 clinics were non-compliant. And the balance of 32%, which were 16 hospitals and 3 CHCs, as well as 10 clinics, were conditionally compliant, but with serious concerns. And this is all contained in the OHSC report. Not one entity, not one hospital, not one clinic, not one CHC, not nothing, in a formal line was compliant, was compliant, or even compliant with requirements. So in principle, your facilities actually have failed in business in Mpumalanga. And I think taking this into account, it's hardly surprising you can't get doctors and specialists, because no doctor or specialist worth his salt is going to work in a non-compliant hospital with facilities that cannot be used or properly managed, because one of your biggest failures was in management, according to the OHSC. So you are going to face a constant problem. And you know, it's just little things like sterilization. Your sterilization equipment. Now we talk about hospitals where sterilization is vital because we're dealing with disease. Sterilization equipment weren't validated or licensed. There was no system in place to monitor or incidence of sterilization failure. Decontamination and sterilization services policies were not available, they weren't there. Staff working with sterilization equipment did not receive training in the technical aspects of sterilization or on the use of sterilization equipment. I find that very hard to comprehend. And staff interviews were unable to explain the procedure by which used instruments, were sterilized from start to finish. I would say that was one of the cleanliness and sterilization at any hospital has to be a priority. The staff are not even trained in sterilization. You also talked about mortality rates under various aspects, whether it's baby child mortality, TB mortality, whatever the rates were. But according to the OHSC report, there is no evidence that morbidity and mortality were monitored, including statistics and implementation of improvement programs to address concerns. They weren't monitored, so where did you get your statistics from? Because according to the OHSC report, there are no records being kept in place. So I have to question exactly how honest your presentation is that the OHSC is saying in some areas there are actually no records being kept. With regard to your Medicare claims, and I think they're alarming, you've paid out $123 million in Medicare claims, if I understand that was your presentation. And this was, if you have a look at the numbers there, that was quite a substantial growth in claims. $123 million. Where did this money come from? What was it paid out of and what was it budgeted for? And you continue to face another 3.3 billion rand worth of litigation. I'm very curious to know whether the department pays for it or whether the department pays for it. This must come at tremendous legal cost and tremendous consultation cost. That has to be coming out of somewhere. And while we're on the subject of claims, the Life is a Domain claims, I think it's 161 million that needs to be paid out in the Life is a Domain. We are told it has to be paid by the provinces because housing can't pay for it on its own. Do you have any idea of what your proportion is to pay out on that Life is a Domain claim? And I raise this because you started your financial year with 842 million rand in the call, which is huge. It is huge when you start a year with 843 million rand in the pool. Now, whether that is 30 days or whether, and you say here that only 181 million, well, only 181 million, they had a lot of money by any man's score, is over 30 days. You're starting your financial year in the red. You have litigation for 3.3 billion. You've paid out 123 million in medical claims. On top of that, you have a regular expenditure of 3.3 billion rand. That's not frivolous and wasteful, it's irregular, it should not be there. I don't know how you are functioning. In fact, I'll be honest with you, you cannot function. As a health department in this province, you cannot deliver medical care under these circumstances. So let's not talk about national health insurance, because under these circumstances, there cannot be one. You cannot deliver proper health care to the people of Mpumalanga. And I don't know quite how you are going to address this, and I hear you've got plans and big plans and big plans and big plans. The fact remains that over the last couple of years, you haven't improved, you've actually regressed. And if I look at page 16, of your presentation under your grant, we are advised that you get an NHI grant. I'm not sure what you label that as. Can you tell us what that grant exactly is being spent on, please? And then I want to talk about sight patients. We see on the Limpopo presentation that Mpumalanga is referring sight patients to Limpopo because they have a shortage of beds. This has now put the sight patients and sight hospitals in Limpopo under pressure, and we need to know what you're going to do about that. I have lost the chair, but I will leave it at that for the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I join my colleagues in thanking the provincial department, the Minister of Energy, and the HOD for the presentation. My chair is on coding. It's been mentioned, the irregular, but I add unauthorized and fruitless this expenditure. But my addition is that of finding out in detail of the levels of each in the province and the program of action to eradicate this practice in the province. According to the Minister of Finance, 8% of the budget is to be spent on maintenance. What is the level of spend on maintenance in this regard? As maintenance policies in place, the department, targets being monitored and other targets being met.
Sorry, the question is recorded that this is in the trust being closer to the mining.
Sorry about that. Should I move it? Sorry about that, Chair. I was, where was my level of spend on maintenance in maintenance policies that are in place in the department and target monitors, target met. Maybe we need to just give us clarity on that one. And another one is, you know, we are the departments, I mean, provinces, national. We are insourcing, outsourcing, contracting. That is the reality. This is what is happening. But my question is, in this regard, how is the department dealing with the contractors who do not deliver? Is there contract management in place? Are there any penalties that are being applied? Chronic medicine. How are the chronic medicine distributed in the province? I have a very special interest in this one because, for obvious reasons, because of my age, distributed is the centralized chronic medicine dispensing and distribution, that is the CCMDD, being implemented. The last one, Chef, is on slide 101. Mention has been made about the medical legal claims, but in addition to your response to what my colleague has raised, if you could tell us about the anticipated or the projected cost or what you budgeted for, because if this trend continues, then it means we are in serious trouble in the province, because from 2014-15 16, 17, 18, it's been increasing. You know, it's been an upward trend. 2 million, 14 million, 33 million, 73 million. And this is the breakdown of the 123.9 million. So maybe if you could give us that. And actually make mention of the kind of types of claims that are prevalent in the province, and as far as this area of concern is concerned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think you have a very extensive document. But I advise you to take the Office of Health Standards and Compliance document and the Auditor General document and compare, study them in comparison with what you've given us. It will enlighten you a bit. There is a lot of things that you can learn from there to
correct what you have given us here. We don't like to go into those contradictions. But if you look at those two documents, they'll guide you to correct what you are doing wrong and what you are doing right to reinforce. Very informative. Just take your time reading them together. Study them. They are good guides of what you could do, because they don't agree with what you have given us. Now let's get to the integrity of them. I seem to think that objectives, strategies, and goals, or strategy goals are the same thing. Maybe just check and correct me if I'm mistaken. You know, in my mind, they are the same thing. So check that. Now, you have a lot of problems. Medical accruals are up to 373 million accruals, medical only. I'm wondering what led to this humongous amount to be accrued when the rules, I think, say that within 30 days you should have paid some contractors. But you there is some truth in what you're saying, and in the way you do your contracting, late signing of late contracting and all of them. You got them all written down. I don't have to reiterate them. But you know what you're doing wrong there. So that's what maybe leads to this type of situation. You do have the answers. If you can correct that and do the right thing, you will have no problems with some of these things. Because that maybe you have inherited some unsavory tendencies that lead you into this type of thing. Just resist and do the right thing, because you are breaking the rules. And I want to know from the NEC what consequences are they actually imposing on this type of thing. Because if you do this, then you can't say you did unauthorized expenditure. And when you know you have to be authorized to spend the money of a certain amount, that means you are doing something deliberately, knowing it is wrong. So there must be consequences if you do something. If you don't know, you ask, and you are told and guided that you don't do it again. But you keep on saying fruitless expenditure. We don't want to see those type of things again, right? You can do without them, definitely. You don't have to repeat the same thing, so we don't need to see those things again. And now you say that if the drugs are not available, you give the patient or some other drugs to give alternatives. What? I don't understand. Maybe I'll be enlightened in future. What do you mean that drugs are not available, you give the patient some alternatives? When you order drugs, you order alternatives so that if these ones are finished, you keep. Maybe why not order two instead of one and an alternative? I don't know. Unless those drugs are cheap, they are all encompassing, they cure all the diseases. And so you just order a bunch of drugs and give, if this one is finished, you give the patient the other one. Just check and correct that. What you are doing. It's what you are doing, it's honest. That's what you are doing. But that can be very dangerous if you do this type of thing. There is litigation. I think it's about, you have one 7.5 billion contingency fund for litigation, and there are the cases start from 7 million to 12 million. That's a lot of money. And if you have that type of money set aside, I don't know. You say it's contingency money. Contingency means you have it somewhere. When they sue you, you can be able to pay. I think you could do well buying drugs and curing those patients and or being careful, because most of these things I think happen in the maternity and gynae department and so on and so on. And you know that there are wolves that are running around the hospital stealing files and all sorts of things. You just need to be, use your imagination to stop this type of thing. It can be stopped, or at least it can be ameliorated. We mustn't give them carte blanche, but maybe if it's beyond your can, you can ask for help somehow on the line. We can't afford to be paying 7.5 billion for this type of thing, no way. The hospitals are closed. Yeah, it's not hospitals. You said they don't have any specialties, and you have machines that are idle because they are not specialists, and then you refer patients to yoga, to accounting and all sorts of things. The reason is simple, that if you do not have a registrar, the whole system is going to collapse. You don't have specialists because you don't train them. You don't train them because you don't pay for them to train the specialists. So what you do, the money is used with useless expenditure, fruitless expenditure, what have you got, all sorts of things. So if you don't do that, you're going to collapse the system, that's for sure. You say that some only MLO hospital has got, can only provide 8 disciplines that are needed, that are necessary, that has to be done in all hospitals. And even that, our colleagues have pointed out that say they are run by Cuban doctors. I don't know whether you meant Cuban trained doctors or Cuban doctors, but that doesn't matter really. What matters is that you don't have this because you don't have skills, and you don't have skills because you don't train the skills. The skills are not picked up in the street. You know, you train them, and then they train the others, then you have the necessary skills. So, and believe you me, if you don't do that, forget, in 5 years' time there will be no hospital, there will be no medical system in your department, in your province. Yeah, you are doing very badly as far as infrastructure maintenance is concerned. You actually mentioned that yourself, that you are not doing very well with infrastructure, and especially with grants that are supposed to be used for infrastructure. Somewhere along the line, you are not using them for what they are supposed to be used. But if you don't maintain infrastructure, it's not just building new infrastructure, because they are always going to be dilapidated. If you don't have the culture of maintenance, then, I don't know, you keep on demolishing what you built before because you didn't maintain it properly. Then it's dilapidated. The rest, we don't have to belabor you with, but at least you take these two documents, we ask you to look at them, compare them with your document, and check where you have gone wrong, and correct that. You have done yourself a service, and the people a service. Thank you.
Two questions from my side. One is on medical case. I would have appreciated if, and I hope in other provinces, if those were categorized. I'm raising this because we are to be aware. Remember that there are those external forces. Some of them, in one province, somebody is advertising themselves over the radio, like if you're given gas, if you have a child of this, which maybe some of these, of course, are dating long time, but categorize those. In terms of authentic, categorize is this term. The typical claim, the true claim is a person developed a dementia, just because of that. Others because of records that are missing. Because I'm of the view that in this sector, it's unavoidable if you want any, you want to have any legal, next legal thing. But some of the issues that are being claimed for are things that you are beyond. I think that the issue is not, I think that they are unavoidable, but there are those that one can avoid. So I think it's about time that as a committee, we don't just general, we don't, I've come to a point that this thing of us being general is not going to have any problems or the department to exactly know. So that is why I'm saying one would appreciate it. Same applies to the NGP. You are not taking us to understand that what is it that you are decongesting our clinic file, what methods are you using? Do you have churches that are assisting you to deliver medicines to as patients going to kids or whatever? Remember that is what the medical department of health is doing. So it is just one blanket statement. It questions that may not necessarily be asked, would be asked, because it is not giving us a picture. The last one is on outsourcing again. We are fine of doing away with outsourcing, because outsourcing is what the number of the contributors, outsourcing is contributed to the number of doctors in the sector as a whole. Now we have encouraged that insourcing. Now, I know that if I had a contract with Mpumalanga, 5 year contract, if after 3 years you say, I'm stopping the contract, I'm just taking the stuff, there are legal challenges. Make us to know that you have something, you have that, you, in security, can make an example. There are contracts that you have terminated because they have come to an end and if you are not renewing, you are insulting. There are those that in this district and this district, you think that by the financial year 1920 or just make an example, you will then be done. Same applies with London, same applies with Kitter. I'm just making that example. I'm raising these honorable members because if we really want to have a clear picture, maybe moving forward, it's going to be important that even ourselves, when we ask questions, are specific. That is why I would appreciate that honorable member was in this area that she said they had a problem, she visited it. She must give you the name of the institution so that we are able to go back and make a check, because that is then going to be very important. So the issue of generalization is really going to create a problem, not being able to, because we are at that stage now. And I think there's public representatives who can't be speaking about the push. We are at the stage where we are to really know. But also in us making you accountable, we are to be specific. Because you are here because you are to account. So for me, some of the questions have been asked by honorable members. We will pray for, we are not doing well in terms of time. I'm the culprit, I must take the blame. But we are going to have a 10-minute break, sort out how you were going to answer where and wherever. In a question, I just want to be upfront, in a question that has been asked that you think that you don't have enough information, say it so that we then say this is what you are to do. We would appreciate it because we do need all the necessary information, but just to be upfront, where you think that the question needs more information and you don't have it now, indicate which are those questions
in terms of what they would answer, Honorable Brother. 10 minutes break, Honorable Members, and we are going to call it.
Thank you.